You're listening to the Leaping Cholla podcast, recorded in the Wrong Mountain Yurt in the Sonoran Desert.
I am falling away from this world. I am falling away from this world. You are calling me.
Hello.
Hi.
The podcast. We're in the middle of section 70, which is entitled The Gigantic of Contributions to Philosophy of the Vet by Heidegger. And we're going to storm ahead today, right?
Yeah.
This evening, sorry. Yeah. So we're at the, what is it, page 107?
Yes.
At We Can Thereby See. Yeah, so whenever you're ready.
Okay. We can thereby see again that, on account of their self-consciousness, those who carry out the unfolding of representation of the world as picture know nothing of this essence of the quantitative, and thus also nothing of the history which prepares and completes the reigning of the quantitative.
Yeah, so we're kind of in the middle of a section, so really quickly, he's talking about how the quantitative becomes qualitative. That is, in a sense, the definition of the gigantic. Things that should have only quantity, in other words, dimension and number, and have no quality, meaning they do not... elicit any, well, let's take a simple example. They do not elicit any emotion in us, or do not elicit any necessary projections or presentiments. But the gigantic is the quantitative as qualitative. And as we saw in the last episode, this is very quintessential liberalism. And it's a result of representation. Of the world as picture, as he says. It's due to this representation, because representation is a systematic form of determining objects objectively through an anticipating, planning, organizing grasp of them. And in a sense, taking a picture of the world and taking it as the world. And so what he says here is due to their self-consciousness, which he really, first of all, he says there in italics. So he's really talking about, I mean, technically, I would say he's talking about liberals, their self-consciousness, and self-consciousness is in quotes. He doesn't often put things in quotes, I guess. Although there's a few quotes on this page, in this section, because he seems to kind of be quoting from the perspective of those who think like this, I guess.
And who call it such.
What's that?
Who call it such.
Yeah, who call it such. And self-consciousness is an important phrase. I think he probably finds that phrase to be a little... integral to things like lived experience and imagination, and we can talk about that at some point. But I would say you could even take self-consciousness as meaning identity. It's not self, it's identity. And those who deal with the world as picture don't have any idea of how the quantitative becomes qualitative, and they don't have any idea of the history that has prepared for this gigantic. Go ahead.
That's an excellent summary.
Well, thanks.
And furthermore, nothing at all of the fact that the abandonment of beings by being is completed in the gigantic as such, i.e. in the appearance of that which lets all beings be most eminently.
Yep. So in the gigantic, we are given the abandonment of beings by being, which we've talked about. Which in a sense is the appearance of that which lets all beings be most eminently. So, you know, this goes back to representation, the gigantic imagination, the objectifying of beings, representation as such. In that, those systems, in that systematic representing, we gain the appearance of something that lets all beings be most eminently. So everything that has being can be in this system most eminently, meaning, I would say, sort of most presently, most fully, most thoroughly, most essentially. And I would say that's in a sense a little bit of a nutshell of Heidegger's qualms with this way of seeing the world, because the real world, in the world not as picture, but the world as world, or life as life, or things as things, or events as events, not all beings have being most eminently, because we're actually closer or farther from beings. Things are more in the past, more in the future. Things are more present, they're less present. Things are layered underneath each other through emotionality, through actually through real representation. And so, you know, in this, it's kind of an everything all at once, all the time system, right? Everything has being, the beings are right there. It's the representational world. World is picture, everything is right there. And that's kind of what Heidegger is saying, is that fake appearance world of representation, where everything is possible and everything is represented, and everything is machinated and made, is a fake appearance. Mm. Yeah.
So that made me think of like in the real world, not right. So if not everything's the same, it's like, this is going to seem like it's coming out of the blue, I think, but that like some people are smarter than others.
Yeah.
In the real world, which I feel like guilty saying, but okay. Like, I feel like there's such a, you tell me if this relates, there's such a like, everyone is smart, that when you're like, oh no, some people are smarter than others, it's like I feel superstitious for saying that. I'm like, I'm not allowed to be smarter than others. Does that make sense?
God, you have the guiltiest look on your face.
Like, you're blushing, like, oh my God.
Like you're having the most evil thought. I mean,
I kind of feel like it, but I think it gets back to this idea of being special we've talked about before, or like.
I'm going to have to kind of deconstruct what you just said, because okay. I'd like to be able to comment on it, and it sounds a smells a little fishy.
Yeah.
I mean, some people are smarter than others. What do you mean?
Well, I think it also relates to this idea that, like, you know, the, like we've talked, like the SIDS baby we talked about many episodes ago, that like some babies are less healthy. Some people are crazy. Some people are not. Like, just that, like, right. There are these differences in people, and,
right. There's certainly, there's testable differences if people perform differently on tests.
Right.
Some people can do incredibly complicated things that other people can't do. That's true. I've always had a little problem with the idea that some people are smarter than others.
Mm-hmm.
I think some people are better at certain things than other people are. I would prefer to usually stick to like a kind of a performance-based assessment of people, and not necessarily say that means intelligence, because, you know, intelligence is where you put it. Intelligence is 99% intention and will, in my view. But, you know, and people put intelligence in all kinds of different places. But after that quibble, I mean, I think it sounds to me like you're talking a little bit about the, how shall we say, the ideology of equality that liberalism practices.
Yes.
And we might as well kick off, you know, because we had thought of briefly talking in our small talk about this post that I talked about today. I mean, we have a dear friend who is a very dear friend of both of us. And more than a friend, really, like a teacher.
Mentor, yeah.
I mean, I've always really shied away from using the word mentor, but I'm full of quibble.
Yeah.
No, but if I've ever had a mentor, this is a mentor. And he posted on Facebook today, and you know, we're in the midst of a heated national discussion about immigration, illegal immigration versus legal immigration, deporting, due process, blah blah blah. I don't need to tell anybody that. But he posted.
Actually, you do, because some people will listen to this later and they won't know what's going on.
Oh,
right,
okay.
Now,
so well, I mean, okay.
But you feel four months into
Donald Trump's presidency, yeah, and yeah. Donald Trump and his administration is trying to deport anyone who's an illegal immigrant, and people are arguing over that because they say that those people deserve due process, and the counter argument is, well, we can't give every single illegal immigrant due process. It would take us 400 years to deport everybody. There was no due process when they came in, so there's no due process going out, et cetera, waiting for Congress to pass laws. Anyhow, it's the whole sort of argument, it's a whole debate over immigration that's going on between left and the right, which, as I've said before in this podcast, is made incredibly complicated by the fact that the left refuses to recognize a difference between legal and illegal immigrants.
Mm. Or citizens, right?
Or citizens, yeah, that's right. They don't
between illegal immigrants and citizens.
Illegal immigrants, citizens, legal immigrants with blue cards. There's all kinds of classes.
Yeah.
And the law does indeed always apply to classes of people, but whatever. The liberals only talk about immigrants. Anyhow, this very dear mentor of ours posted a quote from Ronald Reagan that was very kind of why don't I read it? Why don't I read this quote? Because I think it's, you know, it's by Ronald Reagan, and it says, on the last day of his presidency, in his last speech, President Ronald Reagan recalled what someone had once written to him. You can go to live in France, but you cannot become a Frenchman. You can go to live in Germany or Turkey or Japan, but you cannot become a German, a Turk, or a Japanese. But anyone from any corner of the earth can come to live in America and become an American. He continued, we lead the world because, unique among nations, we draw our people, our strength, from every country and every corner of the world. And by doing so, we continuously renew and enrich our nation. While other countries cling to the stale past, here in America we breathe life into dreams. We create the future and the world follows us into tomorrow. Thanks to each wave of new arrivals to this land of opportunity, we're a nation forever young, forever bursting with energy and new ideas, and always on the cutting edge, always leading the world to the next frontier. This quality is vital to our future as a nation. If we ever closed the door to new Americans, our leadership in the world would soon be lost. And, you know, I think obviously the subtext is we must not close our door to new Americans. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, interestingly, I think probably a lot of people would agree with.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm a person on the right, but I believe in immigration. I think most people on the right talk about what they call a more sensible, responsible immigration policy. I think they say that letting 12 million, 15 million, whatever it is, people in illegally who snuck into the country and never documented themselves, never applied for citizenship or anything, is not what we think of as immigration. And so blah, blah, blah. And I think, so it's, I read this because I think that
that quote is less bad than I thought it was.
Yes, it's very generalist, but that's kind of the way liberals operate. Okay. They say very generalist, almost inarguable things like that.
Yeah, that's true.
But yet you know that the point is to say what you're doing.
Oh my God, you're right.
Is wrong. Jesus,
I just fell for it.
You did.
I'm not cured.
You fell for it. You totally fell for it. It's supposed to make you feel good. It's supposed to make you feel like something, but it doesn't. You know, specifically that quote can apply to people who apply to be in America and say, "I want to come to America and live the American dream." You know, the whole argument right now is, should the border be open and anybody can come in, or should the border have a process where you need to apply to come in? Mm-hmm. So, you know, nobody's saying close the border completely. Mm-hmm. So you totally fell for it.
Wait, tell me more. Wait, I fell for it because I was like, oh, that's just general and not as bad as I thought. But how is it actually as bad as I thought? Based on what you said.
I would say because what a quote like this does is liberals see this quote and they get filled with a sentiment. Mm-hmm. And that sentiment is, oh, we are a nation of immigrants. And when we close the door to new Americans, our leadership in the world will soon be lost. We're a nation forever young. Oh my God, I'm getting so warm. I'm like tearing up. Oh, but that none of this applies to illegal immigrants.
Mm.
You see, so they're
no, but it does apply because that's how he's applying it.
He's not necessarily applying it that way. Oh no, you're misunderstanding me. This kind of quote, this kind of sentiment, rouses an emotional fervor in the liberal heart.
Yes, it does.
And that liberal emotional fervor makes it impossible for them to make and conceive of and participate in and recognize a rational distinction mm-hmm. between illegal and legal immigrants.
Yeah.
That's why they won't use the word illegal immigrant when they talk about immigration and they're talking about the 12 million people that Biden let sneak across the border. They just call them immigrants,
mm-hmm.
but they're not immigrants. Mm-hmm. Immigrants, you know, let's say, I mean, we don't even need to go back to Ellis Island. Immigrants.
That's what I was thinking of, though.
Yeah, but that's ridiculous. So there's, you know, we've had lots of immigration since then. We don't need to sit here and be like, you know, in 1920, you know, immigrants go to the embassy or they go to the border or they go to an immigration service agency and they say, I want to become an American.
Yeah.
What's the process?
Yeah.
And those immigration officers or whoever tell them the process. And they then go through the process. It's like my daughter. My daughter goes to Scotland. She gets a student visa. Then when her student visa is up, she has to do something else. Then something else. And she does it legally until mm-hmm. she becomes a Scottish citizen, if that's what she wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
That is called immigration.
Yes.
Sneaking over the border at night.
Yeah.
With a cartel coyote that you paid $6,000 to.
Yeah.
And then going and staying in somebody's basement. And not even registering to become a citizen, and then working, and then somehow rigging this, you know, system. And I mean, that's not immigration.
Yeah, that's right.
But this liberal sentiment of how we're a nation of immigrants clouds reason, mm-hmm. clouds distinctions, clouds differences, mm-hmm. and makes everything equal.
Yeah.
And so that's what you just. This is where I'm getting back at you.
Yeah.
You. It washes over, so it makes everything like Heidegger says here,
mm-hmm.
right? The appearance of what lets all beings be most eminently,
mm-hmm.
eminent. So he uses eminently here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Eminent, that's not imminently, but eminently. Eminent means standing above others, especially in rank, worth, or achievement. So anyone who comes into this country, it doesn't matter to liberals how they come into this country. They all stand most eminently in the appearance of just being immigrants, but they're not all immigrants.
Right.
And liberals can't make that distinction. And so it gets down to, you know, liberals want to ascribe, let's say, how should we say, competence to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to ascribe brilliance to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So competence, if you ascribe competence to everyone, then diversity, equity, inclusion makes perfect sense because mm-hmm. everyone is equally competent. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure we have a racially and sexually spread, diversified body of employees or students or whatever, mm-hmm. because assessing merit makes no sense because everyone is equally mm-hmm. competent. Mm-hmm. Everyone is equally smart mm-hmm. or capable. And so obviously quotas and racial distributions make perfect sense. Mm-hmm. Liberals want everyone to be beautiful. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. All women are equally beautiful, mm-hmm. say liberals. Mm-hmm. All men are equally beautiful. Mm-hmm. That, of course, is not true. Mm-hmm. If you're going to take beauty to be a sign that you attract more people than, say, someone else, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. As an actual indicator of aggregate desire. Mm-hmm. So liberals stamp being, eminent being, onto everything.
Yeah.
And say everything is equal, everything is the same, everyone has the qualities we say they have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was just trying to explicate what you said about some people are smarter than others.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, some people take tests and they do really well, and some people take tests and they do really poorly. Does that mean the people who do well on the tests are smarter than people? No. It just means they did better on the test.
Yeah.
And if the test is the best you could come up with for why people should get into college, then those people get into college. Mm-hmm. If you can come up with a better way of assessing who deserves to be in colleges, then you can implement that. Mm-hmm. But just washing away merit, washing away tests, and saying everyone is equally the same, mm-hmm. let's just distribute the whole thing according to race and gender and whatever mm-hmm. other markers you want to use, mm-hmm. and make sure there's one of everybody in there, mm-hmm. then that's erasing a lot of distinctions, mm-hmm. a lot of differences. Mm-hmm. And yeah. That's the ideology of equality.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's well said. Yeah, should we keep going?
Yeah, go ahead.
The quantitative is treated quantitatively, i.e. calculated. But at the same time, the claim is made that through determinate principles, it is placed in its limits and subjugated.
Yeah, okay. The quantitative is calculated and put in its place via limits and subjugations. Okay, let's keep mm-hmm. reading.
That is why still today, and indeed today more than ever before, space and time cannot be conceived otherwise than as quantitative, at most as forms of these quantities. And to think even of space-time as something completely non-quantitative.
Sorry, just so we read the entire book per word, it's time-space.
What did I say?
Space-time?
Yeah. That's weird.
Go ahead and to think.
And to think even of time-space as something completely non-quantitative strikes us as a strange and unreasonable demand. Our extricates.
One extricates.
All right. I'm smart.
Yes, indeed.
One extricates oneself by indicating that here the word time, e.g., is carried over to something else.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about time space. He talks about time space a lot. He's sort of making a distinction here that we think of time space quantitatively. We think time as a stretched out series of numbers and moments, and we think of space as quantity and distance and direction. And to think even of time-space as something completely non-quantitative strikes us as a strange and unreasonable demand. And I would say Heidegger wants us to think of time-space as non-quantitative. And in fact, I would even say he would say that time is being and space is being, and being is not quantitative, it's qualitative. And Dasein gains a full relationship with being by recognizing it in its time-space features and factors. So time-space are very much sort of, how should we say, properties of being, or being is a property of time-space, not quantitatively, but qualitatively. So, yeah, let's keep going.
The quantitative, quantitas, can appear as a category because it is basically the essence, distorted essence, of being itself. But this latter is at first sought only in the beingness of beings, with beings understood as the present and constant.
Yep. You know, the quantitative can appear as a category. Because it's basically the distorted essence of being itself. But this latter is at first sought only in the beingness of beings. This latter, this distorted essence. Yeah, a complicated little paragraph. I mean, the quantitative is the distorted essence of being itself. So being itself is not quantitative, or its essence is not quantitative. We only come to think it's quantitative. We distort its essence. Its distorted essence is quantitative. And it is sought only in the beingness of beings. So it's not sought in beings, it's sought in their beingness or their essence. Wherein being, and in which, in a world in which beings are understood as the present and the constant, which is something he's talked about before, you know, that this overemphasis on presence and constancy of being, it's sort of we live in this in a fully infused wall of being, which Heidegger says is not actually true. It's just kind of our represented world. Does that make sort of sense? Okay. Go ahead.
That the quantitative becomes quality, therefore, means that although the distorted essence of being is not recognized in its essential belonging to the essence of being, yet such recognizability is indeed prepared through the knowledge pertaining to the historicality of being, that the quantitative dominates all beings. The reason it does, nevertheless, not appear as being is that representation, in which the essence of the quantitative is grounded, as such adheres immediately and constantly to beings and sequesters itself against being, or which amounts to the same thing, at best allows being validity as the most general of representation, the emptiest.
Yeah. Yeah, so the quantitative becomes quality. That the quantitative becomes quality means this: that although the distorted essence of being is not recognized in its essential belonging to the essence of being, so this distorted essence isn't recognized as the essence of being, yet such recognizability is indeed prepared, so there's a preparation for it to be recognized as such, through the knowledge pertaining to the historicality of being, that the quantitative dominates all beings. So we have the idea that the quantitative dominates all beings. And that's sort of the historicality of being, is that through the historicality of being, the quantitative comes to dominate all beings. And through that knowledge that the quantitative dominates all beings, the recognizability is prepared for the distorted essence of being to be recognized as essentially belonging to the essence of Bang. So a distorted essence comes to be seen as the essence of Bang because being is viewed as quantity. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. The reason it does not, it does nevertheless not appear as Bang, meaning the reason that the distorted essence of Bang does not appear as the distorted essence does not appear as Bang, is that representation in which the essence of the quantitative is grounded, as such, adheres immediately and constantly to beings and sequesters itself against Bang. So representation adheres immediately and constantly to beings and avoids Bang, which amounts to the same thing. At best, allows Bang validity as the most general of representation. So and essentially, he's saying representation focuses on beings, mm-hmm. beings as quantities, mm-hmm. and it avoids Bang because Bang is not able to be quantified, right? Yeah. It's and it is it's too time spacey. It's too quality. It's too mm-hmm. time spacey. And so it sequesters itself away from Bang, mm-hmm. or what it does, which is pretty much the same thing, it allows Bang validity, but just as the most general representation, the emptiest representation, mm-hmm. meaning it has a sort of a sense. It has, in a sense, it's like, mm-hmm. well, yes, of course, there's this time-space world and, you know, of qualitative time-space world where Bang resides. But it's really just empty and there's not much there and we can't really represent it. So, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
All right.
Grasped historically, the gigantic as such is primarily the incalculable. The latter, however, is the announcement, ungraspable from the overly close nearness of being itself, but in the form of the plight of the lack of a sense of plight.
Yeah, the gigantic as such is primarily the incalculable. So looking at the gigantic historically, meaning sort of looking at the historical emergence of the gigantic and how the gigantic plays out through history, it is the incalculable. It's what can't actually be calculable. Mm-hmm. However, the latter, meaning, I guess,
the incalculable,
yeah, is the announcement of Bang itself. So the fact that the gigantic historically is the incalculable announces Bang, but in the form of the plight of the lack of a sense of plight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, it does.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Then I guess we're good. Go on. It's very esoteric stuff.
It is, yeah.
But it makes sense to me. I mean, yeah.
Do you want to talk more about it? I mean, it's great.
I think it's good. I think we're good. We're surfing. Okay. Go ahead.
Why does the gigantic not know overabundance? It is because the gigantic arises out of the hiding of a lack and gives this hiding the semblance of an untrammeled publication of a possession. Since the gigantic never knows overabundance, what is inexhaustibly unexhausted, it must also be denied the simple, for essential simplicity arises out of fullness and its domination. The simplicity of the gigantic is mere semblance, which is supposed to hide the emptiness. Yet by instituting all these semblances, the gigantic is unique and is in accord with its own essence.
So, so this idea of overabundance is complicated. Why does the gigantic not know overabundance? And then he goes on to give us a little more definition of what he means by that. So let's let him explain it in a bit. But the question is, why does the gigantic not know overabundance? It's because the gigantic arises out of the hiding of a lack and gives this hiding the semblance of an untrammeled publication of possession. So the gigantic arises, right, mm-hmm. out of the hiding of a lack. Now, lack of what?
Mm-hmm.
The plight of the lack of a sense of plight.
Mm-hmm.
So the gigantic emerges because the lack of a sense of plight is hiding.
Yeah.
Or being hidden, right?
Yeah.
And this hiding has the appearance of a possession.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Since the gigantic never knows overabundance, and here he defines overabundance, what is inexhaustibly unexhausted.
What is inexhaustibly
so inexhaustible? So overabundance basically means an abundance that never ceases.
Uh-huh.
Right? An abundance that keeps growing.
Okay.
Now, he says the gigantic does not know overabundance.
Yeah.
Since the gigantic never knows overabundance, in other words, it has no inexhaustible unexhaustedness, it must also be denied the simple, for essential simplicity arises out of fullness and its domination. So I think... The simplicity of that gigantic is mere semblance, which is supposed to hide the emptiness. Mm. Yeah. So the gigantic has the appearance of an abundance, the appearance of an inexhaustibility, it seems he says here, but it does not actually have that.
Mm-hmm.
So... because really the gigantic, he says here, is a lack. Now, a lack cannot have overabundance because a lack is a lack.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But it appears to have this abundance because it's a lack that is hiding itself.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
But it is not, the gigantic is not a simple. Now, if it's not a simple, then it's a complication. then it's a non-simple. Mm-hmm. And I think that means that it's a quantity that is quality.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a dynamic lack hiding itself that has the appearance of a possession, but is in fact a lack, and appears to be simple, but is in fact a mere semblance to hide its emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
Yet by instituting all these semblances, the gigantic is unique and is in accord with its own essence. So essentially, he's giving us a picture here of the gigantic as a dynamic lack that is hiding itself and passing off as a possession, as a fullness that is actually empty, as a quantity that becomes quality. So it's a very convoluted, active, dynamic image of the gigantic as a counterfactual space. Counterfactualizing space. Because again, I think his primary argument here is that the gigantic is, shall we say, the liberal world.
Mm-hmm.
When the liberals talk about the world, they're talking about the gigantic. And it's not just a simple thing. It's a complicated, dynamic space of hiding and lacking and possessing and being empty and appearing simple, but actually being having no fullness and no dominant, so these kind of things. But it's it's mysticism. Mm-hmm. It feels so. I don't know. Like, I think we should read the next.
Oh yeah.
Because then I think he finishes his gigantic thing, right. And we start talking about nihilism.
That's true. I do have one question. So, yeah. Like, I'm curious about abundance, because that's such a hip word, trending word right now. This idea that you should feel abundant because there's, so much money out there, so much love out there. You should hook into that. Does that have any relation to this word overabundance, or is it?
Well, geez, I mean, I think that's pretty relevant, because, I mean, that whole abundance thing is definitely the hiding of a lack.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I mean, you just picture all these people without any money talking about how they have all this abundance.
Yeah.
And I mean, they do. I'm sure they do have abundance. They have all kinds of things, but it's always within the money context. Mm-hmm. Or it's always that, I mean, people who are into abundance feel a lack of abundance.
Yeah, you're right.
And they're trying to hide their lack by getting into abundance.
Right.
Even saying that you lack now is not politically correct.
Yeah, that's true.
You're supposed to be all abundance.
Right.
But I think that the tortured kind of counterfactual, contradictory, dynamic space that the gigantic is here is really well typified by the abundance culture that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, 71, the gigantic. According to the tradition, cf Aristotle on, what's that Greek word?
That Greek word is
pie.
I think it's, I don't know, Greek. Here we go. Poson. Well, what does that mean? Poson in English.
I think we would save time if we just learned to read the Greek alphabet.
It's right. It means how much. Probably means quantity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, the essence of the quantum. Yeah.
Yeah. According to the tradition, cf Aristotle on Greek word for how much, the essence of the quantum lies in its divisibility into parts which remain the same as it in kind. What then is quantitas? What is the quantitative? And in what sense is the gigantic the quantitative as something qualitative? Can that be grasped on the basis of the traditional determination of the quantum?
Yeah, so really quick, I mean, what he's saying is, and I'm kind of going out on a limb here because it's not something I fully understand, but I remember this from Hegel. If you're talking about quantum or quantitas or quantity, free of quality, then what you're really talking about is, like it says here, the essence of the quantum lies in its divisibility into parts, mm-hmm. which remain the same as it in kind. Mm-hmm. So if you take a thing and you split it in two, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the quantum, you had one, now you have two. Those parts are the same as the first in mm-hmm. kind.
Mm-hmm.
They're just quantities.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yes, qualitatively, you've changed one into now two. So you had one sandwich, now you have two half sandwiches, and you can now feed two people with a half. So there's qualities inherent in that change. But the quantum aspect of that is that they remain the same in kind, meaning they are both a quantum, mm-hmm. Otherwise known as a number, I believe.
Yeah, that's nice. Makes sense.
So that's how you try to restrict what you're talking about to the realm of quantum, by talking about things that in their divisibility into parts remain the same in kind.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Which definitely relates to equality.
Yes, we'll get to that.
Parts of the same kind and division. Division and distribution. Calculating. What's that Greek word?
Logos.
Logos. Distinguishing, gathering. Distribution and instituting. Instituting and representation. Quantum, according to Hegel, the sublated and now indifferent quality, includes alterability of the what without this what, thereby becoming sublated. Quantity and quantum, a magnitude something of such and such size. Quantity, way of having size, having great or little size. So it starts to read like a notes.
Yeah, he's just making notes here.
Yeah.
But I think he's probably importantly talking about how in restricting sort of the, I guess either the stuff you're talking about or the way you're handling that stuff or the way you're denominating that stuff, and stuff meaning like the things of the world. If you're going to stick to discussing it or cognizing it as quantitas, then you've got sort of some operators here, as logicians would say, that can let you know that you're still in the realm of quantity. Mm. You've got parts of that same kind. You're doing division. Tailung means division or parts. Division and distribution, calculating, distinguishing, gathering, distribution, instituting and representation. Quantum includes the alterability of the what without this what, thereby becoming sublated. Sublate to sublate is a super important word in German philosophy. It's Aufhebung, and it means to kind of it means to both negate something and then make it more than it was. I don't know. I think that this list of stuff is just him trying to hammer out kind of what the analytic space of the quantum is. Mm. Why he's doing that? I mean, I think he's really struggling to get at this idea of the gigantic and how the gigantic mm-hmm. contains these functionalities of quantity, mm-hmm. but tends to veer into the quality. By listing these kind of things, things like instituting and representation and division and distribution and gathering and dividing up the what without the what becoming sublated, he's trying to just kind of get at the idea of what the gigantic is. Mm-hmm. And I think we should try to loop around and kind of relate this to mm-hmm. what we were talking about before. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear if you have any thoughts about what all this means. Mm. I mean, Go ahead.
No, were you, you go say ahead. Something? No, no.
I mean, because I think we should probably think about it via circling back to a little about what we were talking last week with, you know, with anxiety and with liberal worldview. Mm-hmm. And quantity versus quality, and sort of like the mass of facts that life presents to us, and then the mass, which we might call quantity, facts even as projected possibilities, which is the quantity in the equation. Mm-hmm. And then the quality is the likelihood of occurrence. Mm-hmm. So possibility versus probability, in a way, it could be called.
Right, yes.
I think that this distinction between quantity and quality, and the way the gigantic turns quantity into quality, and the way we can stick to quantity and not go to quality, is really important when it comes to diagnosing and dissecting the liberal worldview that generates anxiety and self-deception, self-consciousness, aka self-deception, and identitarianism and identity, etc. Let me finish, and then you and so then I think what really is the nub here is we need to understand what is quantity, and we need to understand what is quality, how they differ, the kind of cognitive tools we use to analyze one versus the other, how we can recognize one versus the other, because in order to know their, because we need to know their difference and how to find their difference and recognize their difference and sense their difference in all of our cognitions and assumptions and theorems and ideologies. Because if we don't recognize the difference, we don't know how to find the difference, they become each other.
Yeah.
And our thinking becomes really effed up.
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Yeah, totally. Can you say again how possibility versus probability, how that maps onto quantity and quality?
So you have the possibility of all the things that might happen to you today.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's just, in a sense, let's call that quantity.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's just a quantity. It's just...
Yeah.
Think of it this way. You've got all the things that could happen to you today. If you split them up into the things that are, you know, the things that would happen to you, let's say, I don't know, in the house versus things that would happen to you outside the house, quantitatively, they're the same thing because it's still just things that could happen to you. And so they're the same in kind. So they have that feature that is key to knowing that something is a quantitas. And that is when they are divided, they're still the same in kind.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the possibility of everything that could happen to you is just a number.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a gigantic list of things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that list could be split into everything
limitless.
That starts... What's that?
It's limitless.
Nothing is impossible. I mean, in the liberal view, it's limitless, but I would say it's not actually limitless.
Yeah.
I mean, yes.
You're
technically
right.
It's limitless.
No, probably. Don't go liberal on me.
No. I'm saying logically, it probably is limitless because.
No, that's only in the liberal. Representation.
Okay, yes. Yes.
Because, I mean, I'm just saying, above it says, he says.
Did you literally just say don't go liberal?
Yeah.
Excuse me. I've never gone liberal on you, and I never will. Thank you. Go ahead.
In principle, nothing is impossible. I guess he actually said that. Oh, wait. Hold on. This is just like the paragraph before.
Yes.
He's talking about possibility just in the paragraph before.
Yes. I hear you. Let me finish.
Okay. Yes, please.
The possibility of things that could happen to you is a quantity.
Mm-hmm.
The probability of them happening is when you start to determine probabilities, that's when you get into quality, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because certain probabilities are preferenced over others. Now, certain probabilities And so what we talked about last week is when you have probability, that's quality, possibility is quantity. Mm-hmm. But when possibility starts to, aka quantity, starts to mm-hmm. influence probability, mm-hmm. aka quality, mm-hmm. then quantity becomes quality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of like if you take all the possible possibilities and you say that they are all probable, or that any one that you choose is probable without any other
exactly because judgment. Nothing is impossible to a representational liberal,
right?
Then the sheer quantity, or the sheer giganticness, or the sheer mass of that quantity,
yes,
is so overwhelming.
Yeah.
That it starts to become a quality, and that quality starts to become, that quality is a probability.
Yeah.
And you can't deal with such a huge massiveness.
Yeah.
And the presence of that massiveness is overwhelming.
Yeah.
Depressing. Dementing.
Mm-hmm.
And so your probability, your ability to ascertain probable probabilities, is overwhelmed by the quantity, and so the quantity starts to affect the quality, yeah. and you start doing worst case scenario thinking.
Yeah.
Because you're simply crushed by the mass.
Mm-hmm. Totally. That's very well said.
Thanks a lot. So this quantity versus quality is super critical for anxiety, mm-hmm. super critical for liberating ourselves from liberalism, because liberalism is quantity turned into, is the confusion of quantity versus quality. Mm-hmm. Anxiety is the confusion of quantity versus quality.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, this Facebook post is exactly that. Think mm-hmm. about it this way. The quantity in the immigration debate is people coming over the border.
Mm-hmm.
We don't distinguish between, we don't qualify those people. People who go and apply to become a citizen and take the test and go mm-hmm. through the motions and get the, first they get the visiting visa, then they get the work visa, then they get the green card, then they go to the test, and then they, you know, blah, 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 and they become someone through all the immigration methods. That's a person who comes into the country. So is a person who sneaks in at night through Nogales, Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They're the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Quantitatively the same thing. Right?
Yeah, because they're both immigrant. Because they're both non-citizens.
They're object. They're people coming into the country.
Yeah, yeah.
They can be quantified as just another number.
Yeah.
But qualitatively, they're very different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Very different. But liberals refuse to let that quality be recognized
mm-hmm.
because quantity has become quality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the quantity, all those quantities, they're just the same. Liberals want them to be the same in kind.
Yeah.
Right? But they're not.
Yeah.
So it's not that quantity becomes quality in the sense that, like, the quantity gains quality.
Uh-huh.
It's actually that the quantity becomes quality that is not quality, not a quality.
Yeah, right.
Quantity becomes quality, which negates quality.
Yeah.
And so they just talk about people coming into the country.
Right.
And those people are, as Reagan said, and my friend posted on Facebook, the future of our nation.
Right.
The hope of the world.
Right.
The forever youngness of our beautiful country.
Mm-hmm.
But they're just talking about quantity, but that's become a quality mm-hmm. for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they completely refuse to actually have a conversation about quality itself
mm-hmm.
because the quantity is quality.
Mm-hmm.
But they're incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They're demonstrably, objectively,
mm-hmm.
just undeniably wrong. Mm-hmm. Quantity is not quality.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because quality in this conversation we're having through Heidegger doesn't refer to betterness.
Yeah.
It's just actually it's quantity is a distinguishable feature that can be used to divide things in kind. Mm-hmm. Because you can't divide quantity in kind. Oh, it's still just quantity.
Yeah.
But quality is what you use when you want to define things as different in kind. Mm-hmm. And an illegal immigrant and a legal immigrant are different in kind. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But liberals will not discuss that difference, mm-hmm. because they have negated the idea of quality because they've turned quantity into quality. However, we also have this second meaning of quality, which is that there's things that are quality, mm-hmm. like they're good, mm-hmm. right? They're mm-hmm. better. They're mm-hmm. They're operative. They'll last a long time. They're, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, where it's kind of at the crux of the debate is that people on the right are saying we want quality people mm-hmm. to come into this country, mm-hmm. and I don't think they're even saying. And the people who snuck in illegally are low quality. Mm-hmm. I think what they're saying is they're saying two things. We haven't been given the chance to assess their quality, mm-hmm. and that's a problem. And second, they snuck into the country, which is kind of a mark against their quality, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But those two things are anathema to a liberal, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. because quantity is quantity, and just people coming in is mm-hmm. good. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is again obviously false, but mm-hmm. there's a fuzz over mm-hmm. liberals' brains. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a blur. There's an intentional blurring.
Yeah.
There's a self-consciousness. There's a hiding of a lack.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's a refusal to distinguish in kind. Mm-hmm. There's a refusal to move from quantity to quality because we're told that quantity is quality, guys. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Quantity is quality in the sense that all these people who've come into the country have the quality of being good immigrants because mm-hmm, immigrants are good. Mm-hmm. But that's a lie.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So that's kind of, so that's the politics of it. But then when you get into the anxiety of it, you know, it's like what we've said is that the quantity of the world, right? You mm-hmm. you can't, if everything is the same in kind, mm-hmm. and that's and even quality is the same in kind, mm-hmm. then you can't distinguish bad from good. Mm-hmm. Likely from unlikely,
mm-hmm. right?
You can't. You're not allowed to because that's politically incorrect.
Yeah.
And B, you're not able to because you are a liberal for whom quantity is quality. Mm-hmm. And so you're stuck now. Mm-hmm. You're stuck because when you see the knife, the mm-hmm. idea that you would stab yourself or your children with it. Is just as likely as the fact that you wouldn't, mm-hmm. even though you're a 40-year-old person and for 40 years you've been around knives and you've never done a single bad thing with them. Mm-hmm. So that's 40 million moments of possibility mm-hmm. where every single time no harmful choice was made. Mm-hmm. But yet the idea that you would make a harmful choice now is just as possible as not making a harmful choice. Mm-hmm. Because those 40 million times don't count mm-hmm. qualitatively. Mm-hmm. They're just quantities.
Yeah. Oh, right. They don't count, right. Wait, they don't count qualitatively?
Well, they're just they don't count qualitatively in the sense that they're not different in kind.
Yeah.
From the one time you sitting there with the knife. They're not different kind in the sense that they bespeak a probability that is equal to this one time.
Right.
I mean, right. There's something a little bit like flipping the penny. Like if you flipped a penny and it's come up heads 40 million times.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I honestly, I don't know how this relates, but I just thought I'd bring it up. But then you're going to flip the penny again. It's apparently, you know, it's going to be heads or tails. It's the same thing, right?
Right.
That's...
Right.
That's...
Thinking it could be heads or tails equally is...
Yeah, it's no more likely to be heads just because it's been heads for 40 million times.
Right.
That's like... I mean, how does that relate? I mean, I think it's just that... So, okay, fair enough. True. Apparently, it could be heads or tails equally, even though it's been heads 40 million times, right?
Yeah.
It could be tails this time.
Uh-huh.
That's the way... That's quantitative thinking.
Right.
And that's why the knife is scary.
Yeah.
But qualitative thinking would say... Those 40 million times aren't just me flipping pennies.
Yeah.
They weren't just quantitative events.
Yeah.
In a way, the metaphor doesn't map.
Yeah.
Those were actually me making a choice.
Mm-hmm.
But my choices are not the flips of a penny.
Mm-hmm.
My choices are instances of my constitution manifesting its intentionality, its will, and its mm-hmm. control over itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that maps, that aggregates, mm-hmm. that accrues. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just another flip of the penny.
Mm-hmm.
It's 40 years of dispositional imprinting. Mm-hmm. On yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would literally, in order to take the knife, you would literally have to outweigh those 40 million dispositional imprints mm-hmm. in one moment. And that's a qualitative imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if that goes back to... The space and time idea. So he said that today we cannot.
Yes.
Think of space and time.
Yes, very
other
good.
Other than quantitatively.
Very good. Exactly right. So, if time space is quantitative.
Yeah.
Then the 40 million times you did not do anything with the knife, mm-hmm. and the one time you're staring at the knife. Are the same in kind,
mm-hmm.
then that implies that they are quantitative. They are quantitas. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that implies that the time space of those 40 million times mm-hmm. is equal to this one mm-hmm. time space mm-hmm. of this one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? We can only think of time space quantitatively. Think of them qualitatively. And the time space of those 40 million is this massive qualitative
mm-hmm.
accretion.
Mm-hmm.
of dispositional imprinting and constitutional embedding of mm-hmm. your intentional control over yourself
mm-hmm.
qualitatively. And it's mm-hmm. it's that whole chunk, that 40-year chunk of dispositional imprinting
mm-hmm.
is not the same in kind as the moment you're staring at the knife. They are qualitatively very different because time-space is a quality.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a quantity.
Right.
So the whole cognitive structure by which you're viewing time, space, quantity, quality, possibility, probability, etc., and the way anxiety implants itself into that structure, that system,
mm-hmm.
is a result of liberalism's epistemology.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And it says that quantity says that
it's all equal,
one to one. Everything
right.
is heads or tails. Everything.
That's right. Exactly. It's all equal. It's all equal.
Whereas quality recognizes that there's a 40 million to one.
Yep.
Or even.
Yep.
I'm not even sure. Or maybe it's not even numbers. But
that's the thing. It's not even actually numbers. It's not odds. It's not. It's not betting. It's not statistics.
Yes.
It's actually.
It's a different way he says. He says it strikes us as a strange and unreasonable demand to try to think outside of that.
Yep.
to try to think non-quantitatively.
Yep.
But I think that's what's always, or I mean, what's always been annoying is this idea, like you kind of said at one point, that was like, well, it's not logically, it's not technically impossible.
Right.
But that's only when you think about it in a quantitative way.
That's right.
If you're in a real time space qualitative way, then there's no question of
right.
that kind of possibility, because you're in a strange, unreasonably demanding space.
Yep. Yep.
When, yeah.
And this strikes me also that, you know, I've always had a little bit hard time understanding this, but I think I get it, is that, and I'm not sure Heidegger said this, but it's been said that liberalism is, in a sense, the triumph of materialism. Mm. And I always took materialism as meaning, oh, what, like, you know, valuing a nicer couch or more bells and whistles, more goodies. Mm-hmm. But I think it's actually different. It's actually more along this lines, is that seeing the world as simply a quantity. Mm. Seeing time, space as a quantity, seeing probabilities as quantities, seeing just your whole life as a series of quantities.
Mm-hmm.
And hiding from quality, denying quality, denying mm-hmm. difference, etc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, literally just being able to talk, literally being, how should we say, ethically and constitutionally incapable of even talking about the difference between illegal and legal immigrants.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like the difference, the liberals have erased the difference from their minds.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've had lots of conversations with them. It's not that they actually, I've never even heard anyone defend the idea that the difference is wrong.
Interesting. Yeah.
Instead, they simply can't cognize the difference and won't cognize it. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, they won't allow it to enter the conversation.
Yeah.
Because they know if they allowed it to enter the conversation, they would be admitting that there is a difference there.
Yeah.
And then they would be stuck as shit, because they wouldn't be up, their argument wouldn't hold up, because the difference would destroy their position.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the hiding of a lack.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
These are really, for me, this is one example of many of the epistemological hypocrisies that completely ruined liberalism for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I left liberalism because of these kind of epistemological errors.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm an epistemological purist, but the problem with epistemological errors is that they then manifest into moral aberrations.
Mm-hmm.
And, how should we say, proud delusions.
Mm-hmm.
And refusals to recognize difference in fact, and just very basic demarcators of truth.
Yeah.
That's where liberalism went. That's why I left it.
Yeah.
It became just awful in that way.
Yeah.
It really started at All Cops Are Evil. That's really where it started with Black Lives Matter. That's when it all changed.
Mm-hmm.
It all changed in like 2014 with All Cops Are Evil, which...
And then there's like a big resurgence.
Well, and all white people are evil, and all black people are innocent, and all this and all that and all this and all that.
Yeah.
Just categorical absolutes assigned to groups of any kind.
Yeah.
That all white people are innocent or all black people are evil is the same thing as all white people are evil and all black people are innocent. They're exact same statements.
Yeah.
and they're both completely wrong, and any policy running on those ideas is corrupt.
Yeah.
And probably deadly. Mm-hmm. So, but that's where liberalism went.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's really actually liberalism sold its soul to quantity as quality.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
We're done,
yeah,
right?
Totally, yeah. That's great.
That was good?
Yeah.
Okay, good night.
Good night. Thanks for joining us for the Leaping Cholla podcast. For more information, visit leapingcholla.com and be sure and follow us on socials. Until next time.